I've toyed with several different topics for today's call, more the phrasing of the topic as compared to the content of the topic. Originally, I started with defanging the saber-toothed tiger. That is, those items in our lives that cause stress. If we could defang them, if we could make them not hurtful or painful, then we would be in a better condition. But I thought about that over time, and I didn't care for that phrase. Defanging is kind of like declawing a cat so it doesn't ruin your furniture. It is a painful, not natural, destructive behavior towards something that is really very natural. So I'm thinking this is more about calming the saber-toothed tigers that we experience. We all face demands that we perceive as threats. And those things can threaten our self-image. They can threaten our lives. They can threaten our health. They can threaten our finances, our standing in the eyes of others, you know, how we look to other people, whether we look good or we look foolish. They could be threats to our family, our material things, our possessions, etc. I call these perceived threats saber-toothed tigers, because saber-toothed tigers has traditionally been used as a way to describe the early source of stress to our caveman ancestors. And so it's real easy to see a saber-toothed tiger on the prowl looking for food and coming across a cave in which primitive men and women were living in, and recognizing that the presence of that saber-toothed tiger would have a change or would have an effect on the physiology of our ancestors. We would go into fight or flight, or in traumatic cases, into freeze. People can understand that, and they could see the saber-toothed tiger as the factor that comes into the environment of a person and causes stress. In the case of our ancestors, it would be really clear, after very little evidence, that saber-toothed tigers were a clear and present danger. Fighting and fleeing were good options to have in order to ensure the survival of that individual cave person and the tribe. We don't really have saber-toothed tigers wandering our streets, growling, large fangs. That's not what we experience today. So this idea of a stress-inducing factor, a saber-toothed tiger, exists in many different forms for you and me and other people. And this is how we identify a saber-toothed tiger, by our reactions when we put our attention on that object, that person, that thing, that situation, that concept. I think it makes sense for us to recognize that we have relationships. We have relationships with anything and everything we think about, anything and everything we have feelings about, that we talk to or about, or that we're in contact with in any way, physically or non-physically, in our imaginations. We have relationships. The way to know that if we perceive what we're thinking about as a threat is to notice this very simple set. We either feel better or we feel worse. When you put your attention on any personal thing or object, you can notice whether you feel better or you feel worse. If you feel better, then our perceptions are indicating something that is not a threat, maybe something that is benevolent, maybe something that's an ally, something that's an assistant, something that empowers us. If we do feel worse, however, then we can be sure that we're perceiving a threat. In our relationship, we're seeing us as less than what we need to be in order to deal with the threat that we're perceiving. You say, to perceive a threat, we must believe that we don't have enough energy, we don't have enough resources to handle that demand effectively. So we end up feeling good about ourselves and what we have accomplished. Here's an example of that. Imagine you and I are in a home and standing together, and all of a sudden we hear a growl outside the front door that is unmistakable. It's a real saber-toothed tiger. We look at one another and we notice that both of us are wearing our Superman or Superwoman outfits. As Superman or Superwoman, we know that we have the energy, the strength, the speed, the protection that we need to safely capture this tiger and fly it to a zoo, thereby protecting whoever else is in the house, protecting the neighbors, and protecting the tiger. We would not have been stressed because we knew we could respond effectively and specifically to this situation. We had what it takes to deal with it successfully. The perceptions of super people left no room in this scenario for fear or uncertainty because they knew that they had the capabilities that were needed for the situation. Let's look at the situation again. This time, however, we notice that we are not super people. We're just ordinary citizens standing there in our ordinary street clothing because we would immediately know that we didn't have the energy necessary to deal with this threat. We would have a huge shift in our physiology. We would have surges of adrenaline into our system that would change all the major functions of our body and change how blood is used, how energy is used. It gets diverted to the big muscles in the arms and legs. We would be more reactive and less thinking. All of this stuff. And we would instantaneously make a decision whether we should fight or flee this threat. It's these physiological changes due to stress that are so problematic for people. Stress makes us more reactive, but dumber. We're not real good thinkers when we're under stress. Blood flow changes, not only shifting to the back of the head and back of the brain from the front, but also it changes how it flows in the body. It moves away from the surface of the skin toward the center, almost as if the command is to protect us away from hemorrhaging if we should get scratched in a fight with a clawed, sharp-clawed animal. We breathe differently. The immune activities, our immune system, becomes a much lower priority because while it's important, it's not urgent for the next survival episode that we happen to be engaged in because we have our attention on this saber-toothed tiger. Everything is focused on the urgent, not the important, not the valuable, but the urgent. Today, you and I wouldn't hear on the other side of a front door the growling of a saber-toothed tiger. That's not going to happen. But we may think of the mail in the mailbox out by the driveway as a serious threat to our well-being because of what could arrive in the mail at any day. The telephone ringing for some people is a saber-toothed tiger. It could be creditors calling. It could be bad news about a family member. It could be other things that we perceive as harmful to us. Most people have recognized this experience. You're driving down the highway. Maybe you're going the speed limit, maybe not. And all of a sudden you notice there's a red light flashing in your rearview mirror of a police car. That adrenaline, that surge that you feel, that all is exactly what I'm talking about. Even if you were not doing anything wrong, you would almost invariably have that physiological reaction to that threat. What's a threat? Being caught doing something wrong, doing something bad, getting a traffic ticket, being fined, and having to deal with what all that means besides money and traffic school or points on your driver's license and so on. All of that reaction is what I'm talking about. Some people have noticed this. They're at work and they get a message. You're to report to your boss's office. Period. No conversation. There's no other information about that. So what is the happening there? Hearts race, pulse thumps away, breathing changes, all the symptoms of stress, fight or flight, are upon us. Sometimes, and this is a common thing that's going on nowadays in the economy, is one company is merging with a second company, and the smaller of the companies is going to be subsumed by the bigger. That means there's going to be some consolidation of offices. There's going to be some consolidation of manpower. Jobs are going to be eliminated. Local offices are going to be eliminated. And when you hear that, it's uh-oh. Exactly. Most people are familiar with this, at least theoretically, is you get a call from the doctor's office as a result of a test that was done. And the medical results are now in. And an appointment is necessary for you to come in and get the results delivered to you face-to-face. Those are today's saber-toothed tigers in one sense. Life today can be looked upon as if it's very different than it was in our ancestors' time. In our culture, we attach more meaning to life. We attach more meaning to our family. We attach more meaning to our own comfort and safety. Our ancestors didn't have the opportunity to change their lives very much. People were born in a town, spent their entire lives there. They did what their parents did in terms of occupations. Millers or tailors or farmers or on and on and on. Those names are indicative of the traditional types of work that went on in those families. And people died in those towns. If they were born into a social class, they tended to be in that class their entire lives. Changing classes was really difficult. That upward mobility was not really a common characteristic prior to the United States coming into existence. People move out of those towns, of course, as most of us recognize who live in America, that we're not first Americans. We were immigrants, or our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents were immigrants. And those migrations were set in motion by wars or famines or slavery. And that forced many people to leave where they were and to come to the new world. Today, we worry about our children and their futures. I'm sure that was always the case, but not so acutely as we do today. We're concerned with the development of their potential. Just survival was more the goal of everyday activity for our ancestors, not so much the idea of human potential. These are relatively new concepts in the history of humanity. For a lot of our history, and this trend is actually popular today, humans have used brute force to get what they want. When you look at those wars, and you look at those famines, and you look at slavery, that's all about brute force. That's all about subjection of other people. And using brute force to get what you want was popular then, and it's popular now. And I think human beings over time have developed intellectual capabilities. And as they did, some of those capabilities were used to develop the ability to be deceitful and lying. And so when those skills, if you will, were added to the kit bag of tools to get what we wanted, things became even more tragic for some people. Greed and corruption have driven human behavior forever. The story of Cain and Abel in the Bible supports this idea. One brother, jealous of the other, killed him to take his property and to get the attention that he had been getting. So what is today's real saber-toothed tiger? There are a lot of levels. On a small but important scale, threats to our abilities to meet our own needs and the needs of our family are saber-toothed tigers. Let me say that again. Threats to our ability to meet our own needs and the needs of our family are saber-toothed tigers. But what is really the saber-toothed tiger is the human ego that kills people, that dominates them and demonizes them so that we can consider them non-people. And so then, because we're killing non-people, it's no big deal. It's not like they're human. What if the human ego is that thrust, is that power, is that threat, is that saber-toothed tiger? You know, the one that criticizes and hates and is judgmental, is sarcastic, is rejecting, intolerant, denigrating, jealous, aggressive, has violent impulses, is thieving, speaks in falsehoods, uses double and devious dealings to get what it wants, and it slanders others. If that's the saber-toothed tiger, and we encounter that in other people, and we can encounter it in ourselves because these energies are seeking to control how we think, how we speak, how we feel, and how we act toward others. What if our vibrations, which we sow through these negative expressions, you know, the sarcasm, the hate, the denigration, the rejection, and so on, are what will threaten our health, our happiness, our potential, and that of our children? If we sow those things, we can count on harvesting those things. Our ancestors couldn't easily change their lives because power was concentrated in the hands of a few, and so was money. Power and money gave some people control over the lives and deaths of millions more. Some elitists claim to have divine rights to rule over others. If you will, take a look at the history of ruling families in Europe, the monarchies, the kings and queens. You will be shocked of the relationships between those families and how they acted toward one another and certainly toward their subjects. One of the things that was so important to the development of this country was the opportunity for religious freedom. A lot of people fled for religious freedom. Other people, for economic opportunity, to stay in a land of famine was to really commit suicide because you're not going to be able to live. You were going to be dying from those same things that a million others had died from. The same with wars. However, over time, and this probably started after the first or second person put his foot on American soil, the consolidation of power and money has been frightening to some of us and unnoticed by others. And freedoms are being limited for some of us. And when you notice what's going on in the discrepancies between the wealthiest and the poorest in this country, and that gap expanding, you have to arrive at the conclusion that money and power and opportunity is being consolidated on one end and being removed on the other end. After a statement or two like that, it's really easy for us to see that saber-toothed tigers are other people and things outside of ourselves. It is the greedy. It is the corrupt. It is diseases, bacteria, parasites, other races, competing religions, competitive businesses, other ethnicities, and even conditions are described as the threats that we should be worrying about. When we take the time to consider the physical threats, put that in quotes, physical threats, and recognize that they are the result of unseen vibrations, thoughts, feelings, words, and then all of a sudden we can start to understand that changing the underlying causes, the unseen causes of threats, is the real solution to the problem. Killing saber-toothed tigers is not the solution to the problem. Calming the saber-toothed tiger is. If we look at the physical conditions in our lives and the lives of others, or even on a local or countrywide or global scale, and you see those as the effect, those are the effects. We can then look for the causes of those effects. If there's an effect, there is a cause. If there is a cause, there is effect. You're not going to find one without the other. Punishing and killing and demonizing the effects literally prevents us from discovering the solutions or the causes and what can be done about them. Look at human suffering anywhere in the world and you will find greed and corruption being powered by those vibrations of criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehoods, double and devious dealings, and slander. Imagine looking at a wave in the ocean. The wave looks like a single wave moving in a certain direction. No big deal. But if we were to look more closely, we would see that there are millions and millions of molecules of water, with most of them moving in a certain direction, and some not. We would say, well, I think that's gravity that's causing that wave, the phase of the moon, maybe the winds, maybe some activity in the tectonic plate, like an earthquake or something that's causing this. Maybe there are other factors causing the waves on the ocean. When we look at the waves of human energy that are forming, we can begin to see the other forces. Let's look at the coming war with Iran. There are people who are pushing for the U.S. to start another war, the third war in a row that we would initiate, and this one would be with Iran. Iran is one word. The United States of America, that's five words. Israel is one word. Obviously, it's not the label of the country that is important here, not the number of words or the pronunciation. What's important in each of these three countries are the children, the women, and the men who live there. The leaders of these three countries, influenced by greed and corruption, empowered by the vibrations that I just described, but it's worth repeating. Criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehoods, double and devious dealings, and slander are pushing each other into a war that will destroy hundreds of thousands of children, women, and men, along with their economies and their cultural institutions. A lot of people think that the war in Iraq was fought, and all the effects of it are in Iraq. The war in Afghanistan, all the effects of it are in Afghanistan. That is clearly not true. Our economy was plunged into the depths of the depression, worse in years and years and years, caused all kinds of hardship, destruction of life here, the ignoring of needed repairs and maintenance to our infrastructure in the country, the destruction of our status in the world opinion based upon our aggression and lack of caring and wholesale murder of civilians, civilian children, women, and men. We have paid and are paying a huge cost because we are sowing a lot of hatred, a lot of death, a lot of destruction. And for us not to think there's going to be a harvest, and we're in the middle of that harvest as it is right now, so how we can ignore that is beyond me. So let's take this war wave, like the ocean wave. The war wave that is happening now is being proposed and pushed by Israeli leaders and Jewish forces here in the United States, as well as the military-industrial complex, who will profit tremendously by making more bombs and bullets and sending poor kids into battle. But that war wave, like the ocean wave, can be, when we look at it closely, we're going to see that it's not water molecules that are powering the wave, but individual human beings. In fact, those individual human beings are you and me. We would either be going with the war wave by adding our lower vibration energies to it, fear or hatred or this or that, or we would be going against the war wave by heading toward a higher ideal than delivering death and destruction to people on another part of the planet. The war wave is being powered by money, influence, fear, hatred, and that overall is a very large saber-toothed tiger. However, our individual greed and corruption, our individual habits of sowing criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehoods, double and devious dealings, and slander are the real saber-toothed tiger, because that will cause our bodies, our minds, our health to come apart, to break apart. We will be the casualty. And that is the saber-toothed tiger that we need to calm. The good news is we have the ability to calm the saber-toothed tiger that is within us. Thinking that somebody out there has to do something differently in order for there to be peace overlooks the reality that peace starts with us individually. And the more individuals that are for peace, and the less that are for hate and war and fear, then we can make a difference. Our willingness to follow Christ's teachings would stop the war wave from crashing down on all three countries. Israel may think that if we were to attack Iran, they're going to be safer. You can't sow destruction and suffering and think you're going to benefit from that. When you sow suffering and destruction, like toward the Palestinians or toward anybody else, towards Iran, you think that's going to make you safer. You're overlooking the law of cause and effect. That is, we reap what we sow. Those of us who know that have got to choose the higher vibration and not go with the lower vibration, and to be able to communicate that effectively to others. So if we can calm this individual saber-toothed tiger, fear and hatred, we can make a change. Our individual consciousness, yours, mine, every individual's, is the saber-toothed tiger that must be calmed. As we do this, we're going to be able to see and hear and feel the truth about ourselves, the truth about other people. We're going to recognize our kinship. We're going to be able to recognize what we've been created for, what our destiny is, and it is to live in harmony on an individual basis, so we're healthier and happier, more successful, more productive, more loving, and we can do that on a global level. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.